Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining this week is my favorite person in all of state and federal and international government, New York State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli. Welcome back, Tom. Always a great honor and pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you, and thank you for that generous setup, Alan.
Okay, so we just passed a budget. Got any thoughts?
Well, you know, we're obviously looking in detail. I mean, my first thought is the obvious one, that whatever good is in the budget, and I'm sure there's much good, it gets somewhat obfuscated, maybe that's the word, by the process. You know, the process this year, and we've seen it before, truly was down to the wire, no open discussion. A lot of things fell off the table, got added on the table, you know, rushing to make decisions, rushing to print bills, message of necessities, and you wonder how much the rank and file members, you know, knew exactly what they were voting on when they voted. So to me, the good that may come out of the budget in terms of, you know, the money for education and, you know, some of the other important issues being dealt with, like sexual harassment, that is all terrific. But you know, the process, when it becomes that opaque, I think really hurts the credibility of even the end result. So that's put the process question aside. You know, all that being said, I think that they came together for some very important decisions. I'm pleased that education got the priority that it deserves. That's an important issue not only for the quality of our schools, but we're going into budget vote season, so having a healthy increase in school aid is important from that perspective. The issue of dealing with the what's coming out of Washington. And I give the governor credit. He's been very clear, you know, ill winds are blowing from Washington. So making sure that we had some provisions in there to soften the blow of taking away the deductibility or limiting the deductibility of state and local taxes, I think that certainly was a very, very strong positive. I think the budget will, from what I've seen so far, will certainly hold together for the coming year. We still have concerns about out-year gaps. I think the budget benefited short-term that we saw a big increase in the bonus pool that came out of Wall Street. We report on that. So, you know, I think all in all, they were able to get it done on time. That's good news. Process leaves a lot to be desired. And we're all, you know, looking at the detail of what's included in the budget. And there seems to be some good policy and budgetary decisions having been made.
Now, you were an assemblyman, of course. What was it like to be, you know, sitting out there while the three and now four people were sitting in the room? Did you feel frustrated?
You know, yes. I mean, the short answer is yes. There were some years where it was a little better. I can remember there was a short period of time where the conference committee process really was utilized effectively, and you had meetings of the subcommittees and the larger committee, you know, that were public, and the press was able to report and let the public know what was going on. But I also remember those years where everything was last minute. And what happens then is you not only rely on the leaders, but you rely on staff, you know, tremendously. You know, the staff then has the responsibility, you know, for even after the leaders meet, it's really the staff that, you know, negotiates all the fine detail. So, you know, last minute you get a memo, you might get a conference, and I hated, you know, the moments when you did it, you know, at 2 or 3 in the morning. And I can remember some of the years where, you know, we finished voting, we came outside and it was daylight and the birds were chirping. I mean, that's the kind of thing, end of session, end of the budget process, where you really are not 100% sure of the information you're getting, how complete it is, and you really don't have the chance to give any reaction because it's basically take it or leave it at that point. That's very frustrating.
So Tom DiNapoli, the question I would have is, what I didn't see in the budget and what I didn't see were ethics provisions. And I'm very concerned about that because I think people don't like New York State government and don't like it at all because they think it's a bunch of corrupt people. We just saw another assemblywoman quitting because she had legal troubles. Why won't they do something in their own to help themselves?
Well, ethics broadly defined. I was disappointed there was not, and this is related to ethics, accountability on spending, especially with regard to economic development, clean contracting, some of the proposals we've been talking about.
Exactly.
Let's look at that question two ways. First of all, the overall point of your question, which is why can't we come to an agreement? Well, clearly, under the current political setup, you have very different opinions on issues like public financing of elections, which I think is essential, moving the legislature to be more clearly full-time rather than part-time, as some people still, you know, prefer to call it, but it's basically a full-time position. Those are issues that, given the current political lineup, there clearly is not a consensus. The other part, though, implied in your question, from my perspective, is, and you saw it this year, the governor put in many, many, many policy issues into the budget, and arguably, when you load policy questions in the budget, you know, one argument is, well, that's the only time they really make decisions, so that's a good time to get to conclusion on those issues. The other argument, frankly, is you don't have the time to thoughtfully analyze these other issues, and you delay the process to come to a resolution on the more purely budgetary dollars and cents issues. From my point of view, whether it's ethics reform, clean contracting, electoral reform, making it easier for people to participate, go down the long list. Those issues are still there, and the legislature is still in session, you know, until June at the very least. There's still time to do those things. And I think to a certain extent, expectations may have been unreasonably raised because they were included in the budget because, you know, frankly, many of those issues are not tied to the budget.
Okay.
So there's still time to look at it. And it's an election year, and you know, hope springs eternal that that there will be progress made in this area.
Now, Tom, I got so many questions that you're going to have to keep your answers just a little shorter.
Okay.
I say that respectfully, sir. But I'm going to ask you, first of all, the governor and the legislature did reach this on-time budget, but there is a plan advanced by the governor for Senate unity, you know, unity somehow that the so-called IDC or Independent Democratic Conference, who are voting with the Republicans and keeping them in power, come back with the Democrats and maybe act as a separate conference. What do you make of all of that?
Well, obviously, that's the big political question in Albany right now. They had an agreement announced many months ago that was going to take effect in April. I'm not privy to the inside word on what's happening there, but you know, you have a special election coming up on April 24th, I guess it is, and my suspicion is we might have to wait for that election to happen to see whether or not the Democrats retain those two seats, and then we will see whether or not that arrangement, in fact, comes to pass.
If you were a betting person, would you bet against it or for it?
I would still bet for it, although I know when, you know, in the chatter that goes out on the Capitol, there are many folks who are very, very skeptical.
I'm skeptical. I think these guys sold out for a piece of silver, but that's another whole story, and you didn't say that. I did. Okay, So now I want to know something. We have so much money invested, obviously, in the pension plans. You're the sole trustee. How do you sleep at night when you see these humongous, you know, hits on the stock market because Trump is fooling around with tariffs?
Well, it's obviously a concern. I mean, one of the issues, though, because the market is so high now, you know, in overall valuation, you know, a 200 or 300 swing one way or the other is not what it was, you know, three or four or 5 years ago. So that gives me a little bit of comfort. Look, you know, as a pension fund, we are a long-term investor. We have a perpetual horizon, so we're not day traders. And as we've seen, certainly this first quarter that's just ended in 2018, it's a roller coaster. And that notion that it was only going to go up, well, that's not the case anymore. So, yeah, we're concerned. We finish our valuation of the fund, Alan, on March 31st. We're crunching the numbers now. I think we ended up having a good year despite the volatility of the first quarter. But I think 2018 could very well be a very different year than 2017. We saw a very high profit increase for Wall Street in 2017. We may not see that in 2018.
So do you ever go up to the Senate chamber?
I actually haven't been in either chamber for a while. So I've been there in the past, but I haven't been there lately.
Do you think you might want to use your cell phone? I say that because our friend, friend Ken Lovett of the Daily News, who's on this program a lot, as are you, got into trouble, and they arrested him and put him in handcuffs because he used his cell phone, even though they all use their cell phones out there. So what do you make of that whole thing?
That was one of the more bizarre stories that we've had recently, but I gather he had a very capable pro bono attorney who showed up to help ensure that he would not have to spend too much time there. I mean, look, it's
you mean the governor?
Yeah, it seems like it was certainly an overreaction to a situation, and thankfully it passed rather quickly, and we can chuckle about it. But that certainly should not be the kind of thing that would happen again. Ken perhaps learned his lesson on using a cell phone, but you know, to start dragging reporters out in handcuffs is not exactly the kind of atmosphere that we want to see in the state capitol.
What do you make of the federal tax overhaul workaround as proposed by Governor Cuomo? Other states are looking at it. Can it work? I've talked to some people like E.J. McMahon who say it will not work. They're not going to let them do it. Is it doable?
It's probably too soon to tell. I mean, I give the governor credit for coming up with something because we really were targeted, and it is going to hurt taxpayers and ultimately could hurt the overall economic condition and by extension, the revenues coming to the state. You know, on the charitable trust, we need to see whether or not that'll pass muster with the IRS. And, you know, time will tell on that. How many businesses will want to take advantage of the payroll tax rather than the income tax? Again, it may be a very limited response to that, but you know we're really targeted. New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, California. Gee, what a coincidence! Blue states are the ones that are going to be hurt by these federal tax changes, and then on top of it, to pay for the tax cut, I'm sure we're going to see cuts in programs that benefit many New Yorkers, healthcare, and other programs. So we're really headed for, I think, some very problematic fiscal and budgetary conditions as a consequence of federal budget choices, and certainly because of the tax reform cut.
Well, how will that impact you as the comptroller?
Well, look, anything that hurts the economic underpinnings of the state and would hurt revenue coming to the state is certainly going to make all of our jobs more difficult in tracking what the revenue trends are for the state and moving forward for dealing with our budget and out-year budget gaps. But I think as with so much that's happened since November 2016, there's a lot of uncertainty and a lot of twists and turns to this scenario. What happens in the fall with the elections? You know, will the Democrats win one or both houses back? Will that then start to moderate or maybe roll back some of these federal policies and choices? So there's a lot of uncertainty out there.
Well, now you and Governor Cuomo seem to be getting along pretty well today. You've always been a team player. He sometimes picks on, you know, you or the Attorney General or others. And I see that you have appointed a first ever decarbonization advisory panel. What's that about?
Well, you know, we've been very focused, and we've talked on your show in the past about the issue of climate change as a material risk to our investment portfolio. We've been very proactive in a host of our engagements with companies, particularly with regard to fossil fuel companies and emitters of greenhouse gases, to decarbonize our pension fund, in effect. Governor has an opinion that there's more that could be done across the board, not just with pension fund investments. And, you know, we work together to come up with a task force that's going to provide advice to the pension fund about what other steps we can take to decarbonize the fund. That might mean, Alan, changing some of our investments. You know, some folks talk about selling all of our fossil fuel holdings. That's not something we're about to do, but maybe over time we would do some of that. I'd like to see us look for more proactive investments in renewables, in the emerging green economy, and to do it right here in New York State. So I'm hoping that this group could help us identify some of those opportunities. I am committed to having New York play its part in ensuring the goals of the Paris Climate Change Agreement, in fact, come to pass. The global community is moving in that direction, no matter what Trump is saying, and we want to be part of that. And I'm hoping this panel of experts will help us get to a stronger position.
But in the end, Tom DiNapoli, your job as comptroller is to make sure that you keep the pension fund fiscally healthy. And we know that sometimes that's risky when you, for example, solar panels. They haven't really worked out in New York State the way a lot of people thought they would.
Yeah, it's always a balancing act because, you know, you're trying to look long term. And you're absolutely right. The fiduciary responsibility is first and foremost to look out for the pension benefits of those 1.1 million New Yorkers who are part of our system. That's a lot of New Yorkers who depend on the decisions we make. But, you know, we have to be cognizant of the fact that we have a responsibility that I think is consistent with fiduciary's duty to make sure that the investments that we're making not only have a short-term benefit to us, but a long-term. And there's no doubt when you're talking about climate, when you're talking about the evolution in the energy sector, that we are changing and we are moving as a world community, not just as a New York or a U.S. community. So we want to be cognizant of that, and so we want to be part of that transition and recognize that for the long term, when you're making some of these choices and you're looking for investment opportunities in the emerging green and clean tech industries, that's going to position you well for the future and for the long term. But you're right, there are sometimes short-term impacts that perhaps don't always turn out as positively as you'd like. But Alan, that's the risk with any investments that we make.
Indeed it is. So let's talk a little bit about the race for governor. Let's talk politics. Andrew Cuomo has $31 million in hand that we know about. He's talked about getting rid of the LLCs, but the LLCs have put some of that money in. Do you think we'll see a time when the legislature eschews the use of LLCs in our politics?
Well, I mean, that's one of those reforms, you know, certainly under the umbrella that we talked about earlier. I mean, to me, that should be the easy one. And everybody seems to, most everyone seems to voice support for closing that loophole. The amounts of money that come into our politics, it's unacceptable. The limits that are allowed under the law to begin with, and then when you compound that by having all these LLCs that can multiply that by tens of thousands of dollars, it just, at the very least, creates the appearance of compromise, you know, if not the reality. It doesn't seem to be happening, you know, this year. But again, as I said earlier, there's still time before the legislature adjourns in June for the break. There's still time to do it.
That should be an easy one. To which I say, don't hold your breath. Okay, so now Cynthia Nixon wants to run against, is running in a primary against the governor. She's Sex in the City and an attractive candidate in terms of her intellect. And I'm wondering whether or not you intend to take a side between Nixon and Cuomo.
Well, you know, as we get closer into the political season, I'm sure those discussions will happen. My expectation is twofold at this point, based on how I see the landscape. Number one, I expect to be on the Democratic ticket and running again for controller. And number two, I expect that ticket to be headed by Andrew Cuomo.
Okay. Now, Mark Molinaro, a Republican, a mayor from Tivoli and a county exec, now is entering the race. He's a fairly attractive person, too. We don't know that he'll be the candidate. But do you think he could present a danger to the governor?
Oh, I think after Donald Trump's election, anything is possible in politics. So I don't think any candidacy should be taken for granted. I think people are still very on edge about many, many issues. But I do think somewhat as a consequence of what's been happening in Washington, it is shaping up to be a very strong year statewide for Democrats. So Mark is a good fellow. You know, we've worked together on some issues, but I think whether it's Mark or John DeFrancisco, it's going to be very, very tough. Certainly for the candidates for controller or AG, it's going to be very tough to compete statewide. I think the more likely flashpoints this year, and this will come as no surprise, the congressional seats, especially those that will be very much in play, and the state Senate races. I think that's where you're going to see a great deal of the energy. And that, you know, because those districts are much more at a, you know, local level, you could see some surprises there both ways.
Speaking of which, should legislators get a pay raise, you know, basically $80,000 a year, plus Lulus and the other stuff, travel stuff. But that's not a lot of money for a job like that. But they refused. And last time when Cuomo said, I'll give you the pay raise, but you got to come across with ethics reform. We've talked about ethics reform on this program already today. But what is it about these guys that they just won't say no outside income?
Yeah. The ethics agenda is very much an unfinished agenda. You know, I do think it's been a long time since there's been a pay raise. As you know, part of the budget agreement is to have a commission, another commission, take a look at this issue. Our office is going to play a role in that, so I don't want to prejudice, that convening of that group that I'll be a part of. But I think it's certainly appropriate to take a look at the question of compensation levels, and certainly for, especially for downstate members, it is certainly it's very difficult if that's your sole income for many of the members, and we'll take a look at it. But, Alan, I don't disagree with you. It would have happened a lot sooner if the reforms on the ethics side, particularly as it involved legislators, if those had been adopted, we wouldn't be still debating the issue of a pay raise in 2018.
And when you sit down with that commission, they pretty well got their marching orders, don't they? I mean, give them what they want.
I don't have my marching orders, and given the fact that the commission kind of came into being without, at least for me, anybody asking me about it or whether we'd want to be on it, it's another example of when you're doing things last minute, you just kind of put something in there. I even found out after the fact, oh, by the way, you're on this commission. Oh, what's news to me? So no, I haven't gotten any marching orders, so we're going to approach it with a very open mind.
Okay, one last question, and we only have a minute. Joe Prococo is convicted on 3 felony counts. More trials coming up. Is this bad news for the governor?
I think it's bad news for everyone in New York politics, because we want to have the reality of clean government and decisions being made on the merits of the decision, not to favor anybody. So anytime, whether it's an elected official or a high-level appointed official gets in trouble like this, it undercuts the credibility. For all of us, it means we need to redouble our efforts to do things right. Let's hope it results in some of that reform legislation, clean contracting, some of the other proposals that haven't been enacted yet. Let's hope this spurs that kind of action.
We are, in fact, out of time. Our guest has been New York State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli. Oh, I wouldn't say that, he would consider me his best friend, but I would consider him my best friend. Comptroller, thanks so much for joining us, Tom.
Thank you, my best friend.
Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Thank you.